we are about to go into the match. We'll do a little bit of narration to kind of set the scene of the day and everything. But there are a few character things that normally we would probably resolve in the moment, but I'm still learning this game. So we're going to resolve right now before the match. And that is, a couple of you have addressed traits or done things that I feel like would address traits in play that can generate for you an important piece of in-game currency, but it also carries like the weight of some other in-game things, which are conditions or getting extra fight. So the big thing is, I believe the traits that I have seen actually get addressed in the game so far are Braith's Daredevil, Torikoshi's our new captain, potentially, and this is the one that I'm most hazy about, potentially June's Fly On, because we did sort of talk a little bit about June's power, but I also don't know that, like, the spirit of Fly On is, like, using your ability to help other people with their birds.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that we've really addressed that. Traits can be addressed at any point during the game. So even if we don't do this before the matches, like, it's important, like, we can do it during the matches themselves. But, like, I want to take advantage of this time now because we are about to go into the mechanics of a match, which is, like, kind of the most systemically robust part of this game. So basically, when you address a trait and resolve a trait, you decide whether that trait has, like, completely been resolved for your character. If you think it has been completely resolved for your character, you will get an extra fight token. If you don't think it has been completely resolved for your character, it's just like, well, we nodded to it. We're telling part of an overall story, but this will be a story thing that will come back in our future matches. In those cases, you can resolve it and give yourself a condition. There is a whole list of conditions. Those technically replace your trait, but because we don't want to lose anybody's traits, I've added an extra row on the character sheets for people to add extra conditions for themselves. We were sort of like talking through Braith's off mic with Mel. And what came up, we thought, was guilty. Basically, the Daredevil trait was nodded to by Braith having that scene with his sister. And coming out of that, like, I feel like it makes a lot of sense for Braith to have been, like, carrying a little bit of guilt over the Daredevil persona that normally, you know, serves him quite well or is such a big part of his character. Because, like, when you take risks, people around you can also get hurt. But for Torikoshi, I am going to go down the list of traits, and Drew, we can talk through any traits that we feel might be appropriate for Torikoshi.
Okay.
The traits are as follows: burnt out, injured, furious, lonely, awaiting judgment, thankful, mental block, guilty, hiding it, in the limelight, at a crossroads, worried for someone, unbearably bored, a gentle heartache, ruffled feathers, hoarding favors. And referring to Torikoshi's trait, which resolved is our new captain, what do you kind of think came out of that?
The one that really stuck out to me was lonely.
Yeah.
I really think Torikoshi is a lonely, lonely young man. And I think him becoming this new captain has just pushed him that much further into being, having that trait of being a lonely person.
All right. So all these traits do is during the matches, I believe certain match games might reference, like, if you have a trait incorporated into your narration, but with them on your character sheet, as you are playing, you can just go, I, you know, kind of feel like this is a good moment to highlight my loneliness. This is a good moment to highlight my guilt and incorporate it. The other thing, before we get into actually going into the match games themselves, I want to just take a brief moment to describe how a match is going to work. We have a lineup on our Roll20 of digital cards that were created for this game by the good folks over at Story Brewers. We have the cards that are from the core Fight with Spirit, as well as special cards that were developed for Sky Joust. Basically, in order to play out this match, everybody is going to get to play one match game. They are match games. They are things that are described on these cards that we will walk through what you narrate and which cards you draw from the match deck in order to resolve them. All of those will contribute to whether your team wins or loses this game. Because we are playing against NPCs today, and we know we want our player characters to advance to the PvP rounds, you also have available to you, anyone at any time can play Not Like This, which is a special match game that will bring the score to the game tied, instead of having you, you know, be very behind and lose to an NPC and have that NPC advance instead of you. All of the other match games will be something that you pick from a lineup. They will add a little bit of flair to the game. And there are a few unique match games that are designed specifically for this match type. But during a match, everybody will play one match game and one match moment. The match games are the things described on these cards. They actually have a mechanical impact of everything happening in the game. Match moments are closer to what vignettes were in the before game part of play, where, you know, it's something that's emphasizing the action of play, but is not the entirety, like doesn't have a huge mechanical impact. The thing that you can do with match moments, though, are because a lot of you have troubles that haven't been introduced, you can use match moments to indicate troubles. Those can involve flashbacks. Those can involve like things that are actually happening during the match. You know, like you could introduce a trouble of like, oh, your harness has snapped a little bit, you know, in the middle of play. And like, that's going to cause you issues on this particular tilt or something like that. And you can use that to generate like mechanical advantages for yourself by generating fight and spirit. You can also use match moments to like indicate towards your traits or something like that. All of that to say, like there isn't like anything explicitly mechanical about match moments, but you can use it to be the stage for other mechanics. Otherwise, everything is playing out during the match games themselves. With all of that handled, Hun, I will ask, do you feel like guilt is the best condition for you?
It was either guilty or, I think, gentle heartache.
Yeah, that...
Oh, so gentle heartache appears to be more about, like, yearning. Mm. So I think yeah. Guilt is probably... Okay.
Nothing but guilt.
And everybody just take a look at your traits, your unresolved traits real quick. That's into your world for Braith. The idea of like, hey, I'm finally get to be on a stage and jousting like I saw people joust when I was younger. Mm. There is both fly on and fight me for June and losing streak for Torikoshi. All of these like, you know, are things like, if you touch on them, they will generate fight or spirit for you. They could generate fight if you resolve the entire character story piece. They will generate spirit upon resolving the trait no matter what. So, like, keep those in mind as you are narrating during the fight, during the match, because that can help you. And also, think about your trouble tokens. I have played out all of my available troubles, which means if you want to introduce any other troubles in order to get more fight for yourselves, you will have to do it. Players can, it's just like the GM thing. Players can introduce troubles as well. Troubles are, you know, moments that like cause some tension for your characters. They like narratively make things worse for you, but they don't affect anything mechanically. They just make everything more dramatic and interesting. And in return, you get fight tokens, which will add to the individual cards that you will use to resolve your match games. So very handy. With all of that out of the way, let's talk about the quarterfinal qualifier for what I have now named the Silver Feather Tournament. So I think we cut to a scene of where this quarterfinal match is taking place. I want one detail from everybody about like this pitch. Before y'all get started, I will point out that wherever this is taking place, this is not a like super fancy stadium or whatever. They have basic safety gear out there. There is probably a lot of netting set up in case anybody should be dismounted during the match itself. They have basic safety equipment, which is this like sand and dye armor that we got to see in Ire Piora, where you are wearing fabric that has patches of sand in it and it has been dyed with like earthen materials, and it displaces kinetic energy that comes in and hits you into the sand. So you can take big hits without getting severely injured. But apart from that, like, this is a regional quarterfinal match. There are people who travel for this, but like not a lot. It's usually like the people who set up the teams and whatever local area. So you can decide whether this is close by to where you train, maybe far away from where you train, however you like. But yeah, have at it. What are our facilities like?
I would love for this building to be repurposed from before Starfall.
Oh, so interesting. Okay, so could this be like a maybe pre-Starfall like amphitheater or stadium that has been built on top of? Or maybe netting has been thrown over some like big amphitheater or stadium of some
kind. Yeah, something like that. I feel like it has been a place where people gather to watch an event from before Starfall even. It's old, obviously, and probably in disrepair. But I think it is a like an amphitheater, like an old amphitheater that they've retrofitted to be a bird jousting place. You know, but also on the weekends, they do community theater there as well.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot. So, yeah, it's this big open air thing. That means probably like a thing that I will add on to that is that probably some stands have been built up around this amphitheater and there are seats for people under the netting. So there are some people who are watching this from below, just looking up through the netting, and then stands that have been built around the amphitheater that are perhaps a bit elevated so that they can watch more of like the match there. Yeah. So, yeah, there's like this cool kind of like maybe like more people are paying to get into the elevated ones because like people had to erect those. But like there are a lot of cheap seats that are immediately beneath the match itself.
That's cool. Right up and close to the action.
All right. Allie, Mel, other details about this venue?
So it's old, right? And they repurposed an old location. Yeah, I think that the proprietors that currently own this location have been fighting nature, but nature has been winning, and started some like gentle vines and plants have started to weave their way into the infrastructure, and it's just kind of a nice leafy. There's some grass growing in some of the corners where dirt built up. It's a little naturalistic.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of like the idea that this place is sort of nobodies. Like, this is an amphitheater kind of in the middle of nowhere. Like, nobody is, like, the whatever city or metropolitan area, like, that used to be around this pre-Starfall kind of completely fell apart. And people really just go here for specific events. So, like, maybe the community theater is a community theater festival or something.
Yeah.
And people just travel for this place. And it's like, yeah, one of the things about that, though, is, like, because it's not in the middle of, like, a city or town, people are not constantly keeping up this place. So, like, things grow in here, especially with the rapidly changing seasons. It is really, really easy for nature to kind of reclaim this place.
That's cool.
It's like a convention center.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's like a multi-purpose. People do theater here. They do games here. They do gatherings here, festivals.
Oh, it's kind of making me think of, shit, what's our stadium in Chicago?
Soldier Field?
Soldier Field. They had like this old stadium. They wanted to retain some of the charm, so they didn't do anything. They fixed up the exterior, but to add more seats, they built this absolutely massive addition onto it and floated it directly above the existing structure. And it looks like a spaceship. But the reason I'm talking about that right now is it sounds like this is the kind of thing, like, the amphitheater exists, but they built more above it. And it's like a lot more modern. But so, like, everything below is getting, like, green, but you can tell that there are parts that are much newer and well kept than others.
Cool. Allie, what about your detail?
I think it is fairly close to the Burning Tales Training Center. We've talked about how the Burning Tales School is high up against a mountain of some kind, and there's, like, hanging gardens sort of as a situation with the Burning Tail School. So I think somewhere nearby in an equally mountainous area sits this ancient amphitheater where the Silver Feather tournament happens.
This is just the quarterfinal qualifier for the Silver Feather.
Ah, okay, I see. The quarterfinal, yes. So this amphitheater, which we'll have to give some sort of, like, name to, I think, it's not too far from the Burning Tail School. I think that in addition to being in a mountainous setting near where the Burning Tail School is, that the aviary facilities for jousting events like this and other griffin or lion bird related events that may or may not take place here throughout the calendar year, the aviary facilities for this amphitheater are underneath the amphitheater.
Oh, interesting.
I'm thinking about you started talking about an amphitheater, and I started to picture the dragon pit in Game of Thrones, where in the Game of Thrones series we see it post Targaryens, and it's in ruins, right? Like, it's the whole bowl of this stadium is, like, empty and ruined and in shambles and all of that, but the dragons would come up from beneath into the sporting arena area of it. So I was thinking it would be kind of cool and an inversion of expectation if the birds facilities are inside and beneath instead of above or outside of the stadium itself. Does that kind of make sense?
Interesting. So I will have to adjust how I was thinking of the netting for this place, but not like that's not too difficult. So the idea is that the birds come in from beneath this amphitheater and, like, come up out of the ground or, you know, run onto the field the way a football team does. And I guess the safety netting is kind of like a bold construction that is, like, immediately over people's heads and faces. So, or, you know, maybe like 10 feet up or whatever, but, like, it is much closer by. And instead of, like, flying entirely around the top of the stadium, you're maybe dipping in and flying within the stadium a bit too, which is really cool. So there's probably some kind of hatch or something that the birds fly out of when these matches begin and take off.
Yeah, like a hatch, or like in a football stadium, you have like those tunnels, like they come out kind of like at an angle up to the pitch or whatever. That I was thinking, yeah, that like since this is an old repurposed building that has been redesigned and added onto, that I like the idea that it's not that with that netting, that safety netting for the audience, that it's not quite like other pitches. It's not quite like other stadiums that you would have an event like this in. It's a little off brand in that way.
Yeah, it's a little wonkier. I mean, this all has the British football pitch feel of them not all being a regulation size or anything. So that works for me. Great. So I think we see this stadium, which let's name. What is the name of this amphitheater?
I'm down if anybody's got ideas. I have one, but I think it's kind of dumb. So it's...
Hey, I love dumb ideas.
I want to call it Robert's Ruins.
Robert's Ruins.
Okay. That was the first thing that came off the top of my head. But I'm
Who's like, Robert?
I don't know. He's the guy who found the place.
Robert's Ruins. Okay, yeah. So, like... we see match day.
Sky Joust.
Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the mid-roll. Heroes, we are coming up on our Patreon drive, and I've got a lot of exciting announcements to make next week. So be sure to tune in to the next mid-roll for that. In the meantime, I'd like to thank all of our current Patreon backers. Without you, we would not have been able to make this mini-series. This mini-series and everything for it was funded by our Patreon backers. It's the sort of creative thing I love to do, and we can only do because there are people who support our work. If you like what you're hearing, head over to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and sign up to support us. Very soon, we're going to be redoing our backer levels, adding new incentives, and hosting a lot of cool events as thanks to our backers. And now then, before we get back to the show, a quick word from our sponsors. And with that out of the way, let's get back in the sky!
Sky Joust.
Robert's Ruins. Okay, we see match day at Robert's Ruins. There are people who are dressed head to toe in the colors for both the Burning Tails and their adversaries for this match. That's right, Sterling Hawk Academy. I think stretching out around the construction of Robert's Ruins, you see red feather skyships and... yeah, I think it's pretty much exclusively, maybe there are a few privateer skyships, but these are transport skyships, things that people would have paid money to hop aboard, that were chartered to come out to this place and allow people to watch this match. You also see different, like, I think, makeshift bird stalls that are set up for people who have come here on Griffinback. And there is a really like stark difference. I think most of the people who came in on Skyship came in to support Sterling Hawk Academy, whereas the majority of the people who are decked out in Burning Tails colors flew in on Griffins. And so I think your crowd is much smaller. You definitely have everybody, like even the adult and professional jousters from the Burning Tails like school have shown up and are here to support you. And you have this crowd of like old kind of grizzled Griffin riders who are around. And some of them, you know, work a similar job to the Swiftwell Courier Service. They deliver mail. Others are, you know, traveling adventurers. We see, you know, these like starkly different groups of people dressed up in the colors of each team. There is like kind of a little camp around this amphitheater, like of people who have either shipped or flown or, you know, for those who are really nearby, like carted their way in to this amphitheater and watch this match. There is a buzzing energy around the amphitheater. Everybody is excited to see this match and to cheer on their favored teams. And I think this is your first opportunity to really get a look at your competition for this match. You know, there's these camps have like pretty much split the amphitheater itself down the middle. Like if you were to look at a bird's eye view of this place, you have a sea of like silver on one side for the Sterling Hawk Academy, and you've got the red, blue, and what was it?
Yeah, in the Burning Tales document that we did, it says team colors, blue, orange, yellow.
Okay, yeah. So then the blue, orange, and yellow of the Burning Tales on the other side with like kind of an intermingling at areas where they meet. And it's just dotted with these makeshift griffin enclosures and landed skyships, some of which are also kind of operating as like, you know, mobile boarding houses for everybody who's shown up for this. And like, well, on the outside, you've got like these defined camps actually in the stadium itself, like in the area in the amphitheater underneath all of the action where you will come out of, you have the Griffin stables. Now, this is not a permanent setup. Like the aviary here is something that is meant to be put up and torn down because this place serves so many other types of events. And that means that like you are actually pretty close with the people who you are going to be competing against. And I think you get to see the Sterling Hawk Academy in this underground area here for the first time. I think your coaches and whatnot are attending to your birds, like helping them, you know, get tacked and set up while you are in the equivalent of the co-ed like changing lockers that you have set up for this space. So I want to know, how do you like first encounter the Silver Hawk Academy? And remember, everybody has their own Silver Hawk player that they are playing. You see the Silver Hawk Academy team in this like area before the match. I just want a quick scene with you all meeting these folks. So like, I'll bet you had to help tack up your birds. So you're getting in a little bit later to change into uniform.
I have a feeling that the Sterling Hawk Academy flyers have kind of set up their own little area off to the side. Like, they've brought in like really nice tables and chairs and like rugs and like camp furniture and kind of set it up off to the side. So they have like their own little place going on over there that is very exclusive. So like, we are not, they've taken up most of the quote unquote changing room as their own space.
Yeah. So it's just been full up with glamping gear.
Yeah. Glamping, they're full on glamping here. There's even like a butler with snacks, and there's a definite place where like they've given us maybe like 5 foot square in the corner. They've even moved all of our stuff over there, where that's where we get to change.
I love this idea. I think we show up, the three of us show up, and immediately think we're in the wrong place. So we turn, like June immediately turns around and tries to leave because it feels like it's not our space to use. And then we realize that, oh no, wait, this is supposed to be both of ours.
Yeah, no. This is us. And we see Torikoshi lean in and go, "Hi, this is the changing room, right?"
Yeah, man. What's up?
What's your name?
Darius.
And there's this moment where Torikoshi kind of lifts his eyebrows a little bit. I feel like Torikoshi has heard of Darius. He does not like Darius, but I don't think he's ever seen his face. Oh, you're Darius. You're the Sterling Academy Hawks.
Yeah. Yeah. Darius, darling. I think you should know who I am, but that's okay. It's okay. Yeah, we are Sterling Hawks.
I don't, though. It's a pleasure to finally make your acquaintance. We're gonna... Did you guys move our stuff?
Oh, we just scooted it over to make a little space.
Oh, over there in the corner?
Yeah.
Okay. June, Braith, let's go change.
And I think as June follows Torikoshi in towards the little corner of the room where their stuff has been placed, another figure slips in behind Braith and reaches over Braith's shoulder, I think, as they walk in and grabs like another Sterling Hawk Academy jacket off the wall, like in a big show of, oh, sorry, excuse me, that's mine. And if Braith turns, there is one of the Sterling Hawk Academy riders who is a very, very conventionally attractive young woman with extremely symmetrical features and phenomenal hair and really, really big eyes and a huge, bright white smile, just like looming after Braith like a shadow and beaming at him.
Yes, Braith does turn, but as he turns, he runs his hands through his hair and tosses it to the side and catches a stray sunlight beam that just kind of bounces off of his golden blonde hair and eyelashes.
Yeah, yeah. This is a covered area, so there shouldn't be sunlight down here, but somehow there is.
For Braith.
Hi, sorry, excuse me. I didn't mean to reach past you there. So you're Burning Tails?
Yep.
Amazing. How long have you been a Burning Tail?
Braith looks like he's counting on his hand, like a month.
Oh my god, math, so cute. That's great. Good for you.
Thanks. What about you?
I'm sorry.
You're on the other team, right?
Yes. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, okay. How long have you been flying?
Oh, flying? Since I was 3. Yeah, my parents helped fund the school, so.
Oh, trust fund kid. Okay, cool. Braith kind of turns away. And
that's so funny.
To which across the room, you hear the sound of somebody putting down barbells. And there in the corner, surrounded by several pictures of himself and what looks like a butler who mops off his brow a little bit, you see TJ Spicy Brewster. TJ has a rather phenomenal kind of mohawk thing going on that is silver, like it's dyed silver.
Yes.
He's jacked. And he obviously has like tattoos. All over his body. I'm feeling what's his bucket from Cobra Kai.
No, I picked up on Hawk.
Hawk. Yeah.
Immediately.
Picked up on that immediately. Yeah.
The branding, the SEO.
Yeah. He goes, do you even know what a trust fund is? Talking to you, fancy hair. Yeah, you over there.
Okay.
How long you spend on your hair?
It's effortless. I don't have to do anything.
Oh, it's effortless. Ooh, effortless. Okay, sure. Hey, Becky.
Yeah?
Stop talking to the riffraff, Becky. Come on over here.
I'm not talking to the riffraff.
Yeah, don't flirt with him.
I'm not who said I was flirting?
Look, and she's blushing. Look
as
at
she,
her.
As she walks
oh,
past.
Oh, and he is too.
As then, she walks past Braith, she literally like just like drops a hand on his shoulder and runs it down his arm as she walks past. Like you would at a party, like if you're trying to get through a crowd.
Sure.
Yeah.
Braith and just kind of like, oh, and like.
Look
like
at him blush.
Wipe it off.
All right. Yeah. I think Braith is blushing at this point. Like just and probably not. For because he thinks that this is such an attractive person, more secondhand embarrassment at how TJ is acting, which I feel like as this is happening and like everybody is trying to get prepared, June, I want to see your hackles get up a little bit because we got to establish the relationship between TJ and June.
I think June to this point has tried to not pay attention to the Sterling Hawks in the room and their exceedingly competent butler. She has sort of like followed Torikoshi in and like tried to get set up and tried to start like doing what she needs to do, following Torikoshi's lead, basically. Mm-hmm. And at this point, she has both clocked that Braith is like annoyed with what's happening and also clocked how, like, as you said, absolutely embarrassing these people are behaving like cartoons. And she's never been in a room full of that before. And the energy in here sucks and is weird. So I think she starts by like clocking Braith and trying to send him like a look of just like leave it, like let's just get this over with. But TJ clearly isn't someone who is ever told to knock it off.
We see TJ look over and go, hey pretty boy, where's your third?
My what?
Yeah, there's you, there's Torikoshi over there, where's your third?
It's June. She's right here.
Literally right
here. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was your valet. Oh, sorry about that.
And so June, June sets down the bag of supplies that she's carrying or whatever and walks over to where TJ Spicy Brewster has put down the dumbbells and like moved off to the side to be refreshed by the butler. And mm-hmm. she picks up the dumbbells and moves them for him out of the way so that they can spread out a little bit further.
Whoa, yeah. whoa, Carrot Top. That's not your property. Don't touch it.
Maybe this room isn't your property.
I think it is.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did your parents pay for it? I wasn't aware. There's no plaque with your name on it.
Actually, and he points to the wall, and there is a plaque that says, like, TJ Spicy Brewster. And it's got, like, the name of his bird, and it's got, like, all of his accomplishments on it as well.
Why is that there?
Because it's our room.
Why are you sharing it, then?
We're not.
Can you not afford your own room?
You're not going to move?
I have no idea why any of this is happening right now, but none of it's necessary. We're going to do all this on the pitch anyway, so why don't you just chill out?
How about, and we see him go up to his full height, crack his knuckles, and size up June and goes, how about we do this the easy way, which is this. You stay quiet. You fly your mangy little birds. You let us win, because that's what's going to happen. And then
Darius stomps up and says, hey, TJ, spicy, let's get a little less spicy. All right, man. Look, this is a competition. We're supposed to share this room. I don't care if your parents paid to put that plaque on the wall. This isn't only our room. We gave them those 5 square feet for a reason. Let these people get ready.
All right, dare. All right, man. Come on. Just let me look. I'm just, you know, being spicy. And he like walks away.
With that, I think your coaches enter the room. And the coach for the Sterling Hawk Academy is, you know, dressed in, like, I think their whole uniform vibe is, like, pretty mod, but, you know, bright silvery colors mod. So, like, a little glam mod combo going on there. But it has this prep, so this prep edge to it. So his collar is popped, and he is wearing an upside-down tennis visor.
Oh my gosh.
And he does have frosted tips. They are silver frosted tips. All right, everybody. We have settled the pre-match everything. So we're going to be going up. I want to see a good clean joust between everyone. We're going to be selecting match types and matchups on field, says Valkyrie. Everyone, get in your lineups, get in formation. It's go time. Good luck to everyone. Yeah, good luck to everyone. And then flashes of the stadium itself. You can hear people like pounding, clapping in rhythm, singing like rival songs back and forth across the stadium. The people who are here for Sterling Hawk Academy, like, are definitely louder, but there is kind of a call and response that is sort of organically organized within the crowd of various, like, team chants and whatnot. We can definitely see in the Burning Tales section, there are people who have one of the things that I love most when I see in manga depictions of, like, these old man cheerleaders are people who have, like, made the crown out of candles, who have, like, you know, taped, like, the paper around their head with the candles in it. And it feels so appropriate to the Burning Tales that there are people who have, like, this headgear set up that is on literal fire as they are, like, waving their flags and chanting their chants for the Burning Tales. The riders emerge first, like, mounted atop their birds, but not strapped in. The birds, like, strut out beneath the pitch itself, and the crowd goes wild. Like, I think especially for people who have not jousted before in competition, Braith and June, like, the sound of this many people in one place all, like, looking at you and shouting at you, it washes over you like a wave. You have simply never experienced anything like this before. You might find it intimidating. You might find it intoxicating. I don't know which, but, like, the sound hits you. And for Torikoshi, this is a familiar feeling. This is a feeling before you, like, put up and compete. I kind of want to know, especially because Torikoshi has been a little bit of our focus character here, what is, like, the nervous tick that he has pre-match?
Torikoshi's nervous tick is he constantly is stringing and restringing his bow. So, like, he'll do the string and he'll, like, test it a bit, and he's like, nah, and he restrings it. And he does that. And the other thing he does is he has an arrow in one hand with the fletching on the outside. So he's holding, it point, and he, like, taps it, like, against, like, his leg the entire time as well. So he's checking his equipment a lot, but the number one thing is that he's got this arrow that he kind of taps on things as he's trying to let go of some energy.
Cool. Then we see, like, there is a judge in the middle of the field, and they have a, like, box with several flags in it. And these flags are at first randomly drawn out of this box. Each of these flags represents the different match types that are supported in the Silver Feather tournament. Two markship events, the Mounted Joust, and a Tengu Dori. These are randomly drawn out, and if we refer over to our Roll 20 window, we can see that Mounted Joust, Tengu Dori, and the Markship Peace, that's we're still using the temporary names right now, but the Long Range Markship Joust are the three events that are available. And the way these events are assigned to different sets of players is you draft which one of these you want. So Full Tilt is going to be your traditional mounted joust. Leap of Faith will be Tengu Dori, and the concentration is going to be the long range markship joust. So given those three options, technically this is a back and forth thing, and you can decide whether it is your character or the opponents who are making the decision. But one by one, people from either side are going to be able to go up and select the event that they are going to be competing in. I think there are, like, individual coin tosses between each. So you don't have all of the events on the board, and like one person, one set of people at the end is going to be stuck with a particular event, but this is a strategy thing. We do know that Torikoshi's like specialty event is, the long range mark ship. So you can decide how you want to draft out, these events, who gets to pick first and who is going to be stuck with whatever option is last. And I feel like we'll even say that the first coin toss goes to the Burning Tails. So before we begin the match, there's a quick huddle of deciding what the events are going to be.
All right, team, huddle up.
Man, they really got something going on, don't they?
They're trying to get in your head, June.
Yeah, no kidding. It's annoying.
That's their thing. They're just trying to get in your head. So let's let it go. Let's clear ourselves out. Everybody breathe in and out. Remember, we're not here to fly as precision or even as correctly as we can. We're here to fly beautifully, and we're going to be beautiful and win. And have fun out there, I guess. Okay, do you guys have any feelings on what you want to do
here? Torikoshi, what are you good at? What are you going to do?
Well, I'm good at the concentration. I'm good at the marksman stuff. But
then you should do that.
Okay, I will do that one. That yes, yeah, fine. Yes, I will do that. We have a Tengu Dori going here. Do either of you feel like the Tengu? Hang on. Hey, and we see him turn around and walk out of the huddle for a second. He takes out an arrow, snaps it real quick, and then puts it back into his quiver and turns around and goes, Braith, would you mind doing a full tilt?
Sure.
Okay. Do you feel comfortable doing a full tilt, or is the Tengu Gori better for you? I've seen you do both. You're about even on both.
I could go either way, honestly. What, you know, I'll take whatever June doesn't want to do.
Stop, Braith. And we see him go and take Braith by the shoulders and look him in the eyes and goes, what do you want?
I want to punch those nerds in the face.
Okay. Then I'm going to give you a full tilt joust. You got that?
Okay.
Okay. June, you cool on a Tengu Dori?
That's the one where you jump off, right?
That's a lot of bird control.
Yeah, let's do this.
All right, good. Like I said, we'll fly pretty, we'll fly beautiful, but we will fly right, and we will beat these...
Toots?
Toots! That's a great word, I like that. We're going to beat these toots into the net.
Can we punch them, though?
Yeah.
Is that legal?
Yeah, and we see... and he points out the armor that you're wearing.
Mm-hmm.
This stuff, and he taps on it, all that kinetic energy is going to go, and he points off into the stadium to those pots of sand.
Mm-hmm.
I could hit you full in the face with a hammer,
mm-hmm.
and you'd be just fine.
Mm.
So yeah, wail on him, June.
You got it.
Let's saddle up and fly right.
One by one, different members of each team walk up and select the flags that they will be choosing for their events. I think Torikoshi is the first up to pick and picks up the long-range mark ship. And, like, there is a huge, like, uproar from the Burning Tails camp because they have seen you fly before. They know that you're good at this, and they have your back. And like there are different bits of looming excitement. Like we can see for the mounted joust. I think that one is probably actually going to be picked by Braith's rival. And we can see that the audience is extremely excited on the Silver Hawk Academy side Rebecca is going to be doing the mounted joust. That appears to be one of her best events. And like this goes back and forth until the scene is set and we are ready for the first match to take flight.
I see a mountain and I want to climb it. I see a river and I wanna sail. If there's a victory, you know I will find it. Never been the type who is happy to fail. A million miles from my front door, there's things that are worth fighting for. Nothing's gonna stop me, friend or foe.
When it's all we know.
Here we go, rising higher and farther. Only be far and up in the
sky. And when we fly, when we're flying, we're barely trying to only do hang in the show, and it's all we know.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjack's role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more.